textbook hello, that was.
It's like textbook desperation hello. In my voice, to be fair. But there you go.
The big book is hello.
Greet most people.
Hello!
Hello, like
please
me!
Please talk to me.
Welcome to Movie Banter!
The epic week, apparently, this week.
50 years old! 50 weeks old!
Yes. The big 5-0.
They all said we'd never make it.
You said we'd never make it.
Oh, everybody.
Well,
I'd just stop people in the street saying, do you think if I started a podcast, it would last 50 episodes? And they'd all say, bugger off, you weirdo. Every single one of them, word for word.
That's always because you got Jen just behind you going, hello!
Exactly, that's true. Yeah. Hello! Yeah. I can start every conversation with, hello! In fact, every conversation for the last year, I managed to start with, hello!
I think I'm going kind of
this is why you're my only friends. Anyway, I'm Paul Carenza, by the way. Hello.
I'm John Sands. Hello.
And I'm Jennifer Masters. Hello.
And now you say hello.
Well done.
Thank you.
Very good.
Nice to meet you.
Yes.
And if you didn't say hello, you've just made us look stupid.
Exactly.
Idiots. Hope you're proud of yourself.
Idiots. It's not only a 50 anniversary special, it's a Halloween special as well.
Ooga, booga, booga.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, it. Boogeyman films and that.
Well, really? Would be the most terrifying thing I've ever seen.
I haven't seen any Boogeyman films.
Having said that, if I woke up in the middle of the night and you were just next to me just going, ooga, booga, 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 that would
what do you prefer? Would you prefer that or me going, hello?
That'd be quite a good alarm clock.
Well, that was a bit peaky. Apologies if that busted your ears. But, yeah.
Make a good alarm clock, though.
Would be, yeah. That would work, wouldn't it?
The Boogeyman's alarm clock. We could branch out into merchandising.
I think we'll sell alarm clocks of us going, hello. Anyway, enough of this hollowing. Halloween.
No,
for crying out loud.
This is what you've got to look forward
to
for the next 45 minutes. What, you'd rather sit down and craft them?
So I'd rather craft a pun than stumble on some.
You don't like being surprised by your own
Halloween pun. This week we have we didn't have a topical show last week, did we? We did the quiz.
We had a special
special movie quiz. So if you haven't listened to that, go listen and let us know what you thought of it. And if you have, then welcome back. And so this week we've got to catch up. We've got to catch up.
Yes.
We've got
various films.
Imaginarium and Dr. Parnassus.
Yes. And we have Saw 6.
Saw V. And a triangle as well.
Yes. And Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Fantastic Mr. Fox.
And lots of other features as well. Your emails, Desert Island Flicks, which this week will do Best Horror Franchise. And in this week of movie history. And we may also have a guest comedian to play out to you if we don't ramble on for too long. But actually, I should mention. Can I mention at this stage the exciting things coming up? Maybe
please
banter?
Do.
You can do.
Because we've got. I've recorded a couple of interviews with Andrew Collins, who's the Radio Times film editor and used to edit Empire magazine, and you know, big proper film critic,
huge.
And I did one of my little chats with him, thinking it would last about 5-10 minutes, as it normally does. 45 minutes later, we're still talking, and he just enthuses about films so much. So we'll break it down and play it out over a series of a few weeks. Plus, we've also got an exclusive an interview with a screenwriter who's actually made a film.
A proper film person.
A real film. He's called David Bloom, and he wrote a film called Donkey Punch, which was out last year, which is set on a boat, a horror film set on a boat, a bit like Triangle, but not. Yeah. And so we have that recorded, and he's giving his insights into making getting your first feature film made and how to follow in his footsteps. So we'll play that out over future weeks as well. So stay tuned. This is the podcast to listen to.
Good stuff. Yeah.
Hard sell this week. Hard sell. That's right.
Except, of course, if people are listening, they're already listening. But this is going to keep you coming back.
Keep on playing.
So, shall we crack on with the film review?
I think we should.
Okay. Yeah. Well, should we do Saw 6 then? Because it is
the horror.
It's Halloween-y type season, and it's the sort of thing people will go and see. Have we all seen it? Just to check.
No, I haven't.
Jennifer hasn't.
I'm a wee little girl.
It's a bit frightening for me.
I love the first one, but I must admit there's a few I've missed.
Right.
So I haven't seen the last couple because my interests are starting to wane.
Yes, I think there, in one sentence, you've summed up everything. Really. Right. Our interests are starting to wane.
I think mine had as well. I hadn't seen Saw 5, and so I wasn't that bothered about seeing Saw 6. And then, like, last weekend, was casting around for films to watch, and my flatmate has Saw 5. I thought, I might as well watch it as it's here.
Yeah.
And so saw that, and thought, now I kind of want to see Saw 6. Mm. So it sparked my interest enough to make me go and see it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But the film itself.
But you're a generous film goer, aren't you, John? You see quite a lot of things.
I'll go and see most things.
But the trouble is, I'd say I'm slightly less generous.
Right.
Only slightly. I still see most things, but slightly less generous. And yeah, I will go and see as many Saw films as they make. Even though
You find them morally
even
repulsive.
Though, and and I found Saw 6 was, I think, the worst, probably.
Really?
Yes.
I'm not that surprised.
I think it's sort of...
The thing is, it's not the worst, into, oh, it's awful, no. But it's... There's a slight tailing off.
It's watchable, but if you, basically the first Saw film I thought was brilliant. Yes. I thought it was clever, interesting. Yeah. Wow, didn't see that coming. Big twist, all wonderful. Yes, gory, and the trouble is, of course, when they think, oh, brilliant, we'll make lots more of them, they think people wanted it for the gore. And well, some people, I'm sure that's the case. I think we also like the cleverness of it.
Oh, yes, definitely.
That's the only bit about the Saw. I can take or leave the gore.
Exactly.
The trouble is, this is how I feel about all the Saw films, really, except. Less so the first one, but more of them generally, is that however the makers of them, I feel, have got half a good film in them and fill out the rest with gore.
Yeah.
Which is fair enough. And I don't know if it's because they can only make half a good film or they've got half a film's worth of good ideas, or because they know if they didn't have any gore, no one would see it.
I think they're sort of trapped in their own trap, which is odd because it's a Saw film now. They've got a formula that people can come back for, and if they change it at all,
then
they're going to risk losing some of their audience.
Yes.
And so they've got to have a fair amount of gore, lots of blood, lots of weird, I'd never think of that, contraptions.
Yes.
So, you know, it always starts off with one or two people trapped in a thing, and it's always going to be like, oh, okay, and how are they going to get out of it? And they just wake up, and we wake up with them and go, oh, where are they? And they very quickly work out what they have to do, why they're there, and, you know, then this voice comes on going, hello, Jeremy, you know, I have a game for you, all that sort of thing. I don't think they've ever been called Jeremy.
But, the British author.
Exactly. Jeremy. Hello.
I'm going to drown you in tea.
Hot tea.
No. Oh, mother.
I want to see that.
They should, they're British Saw film.
British Saw film.
Yes, indeed. Oh, crikey. You're going to have to extract this key from my stomach. Oh, what a day.
What a to-do.
What a to-do.
Brilliant.
But yeah, so they're always in these predicaments, and they're always, we as the audience watching going, I can't believe they think of that. Who would think of that? What sort of diseased mind would think of that? And in fact, it's not, you know, it doesn't take that, you know, if you've got a bunch of horror writers around a desk for 6 months, they'll think of some bizarre things that haven't been thought before. And so you always get that, and then there's... I think in all of them there's been a bit of a twist towards the end.
Yes.
Like the last 5 minutes, suddenly the rug's pulled out from you a bit. But I like it best. I think the reason I didn't like this one as much is I like it best in the earlier films where the twist was so big that you go, oh, wow, that was the thing?
And it was a proper game changer.
Yeah.
Whereas in this one, I was going to say I didn't see it coming, and I didn't. Yeah. But it's not.
It's not a big enough thing to see coming. Exactly.
It's more sort of
changes the fact we learned earlier.
Yeah,
exactly.
But it's not.
Whereas
really
the nice one, I thought, I won't say what it was, but in one of the early ones, there's one big twist which changes everything we've seen in a way that we thought we were seeing one thing, but actually we were seeing another.
Yes.
And that's the sort of twist I like, as opposed to just, oh, well, that bloke's just the thing, you know.
Are these twists? Do you have to know the whole previous films, or is it something that's specific to the film, that one film itself?
They're generally not. Actually, no, I think three and four you need to have seen.
Yeah, they're together, they're companion pieces.
But then, but apart from that, the twists are normally independent. But that's one thing I do like about the Saw films generally, is that, or the Saw franchise as a whole, which is that all six tie together. Quite tightly.
Yeah, they
more
are.
So than any other six films I can read.
Well,
I
certainly, mean, if it's the polar opposite.
Star Wars,
really, the one we were talking about in the last month or two was Final Destination, which you were saying you can remake again and again with a new cast, just fresh blood.
I mean, the first two link together tenuously, but they never have to.
But it's brand new cast all the time, whereas the Saw films, more than any other, if you've got a brand new cast in it, which they sort of have over the last couple, getting some new people, but it's always tied together by this jigsaw fella, and by the fact he's got his protege, and he's got his wife, and he's got the detective looking for him. And it's the same people. And the other thing, part of their formula, which does slightly frustrate me, is that, and which again I think they've dug themselves a hole they can't get out of, is the use of flashbacks.
Yes.
And every film now, probably a good third of the film is flashback.
Yes.
And
but admittedly, flashbacks to the previous films.
Yeah, often the previous
film.
So
it makes six tie in with the first film.
True.
Which probably wasn't intended at the time.
But often it means that actually
make it work.
They're only filming a new 60, 70 minutes because they're using 20 minutes from the last film.
So it's recycled.
Well, but it's not recycled material. It's a fake flashback.
New angles. No, fair point. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's stuff that we haven't seen before, but then you watch it and think, oh, that must have happened during the first film.
But then
But it's not in the
first.
Story,
no, exactly. Really. And in the first couple, like when you know, we'd see how John the Jigsaw Man thing started out as this, and it was kind of interesting. You know, whenever you get a franchise after two or three, they always start to show you how the serial killer started out, yes. A bit of a prequel thing, and so they do that. But now we get to six, and they're going, well, what else have we not shown? Oh, we didn't. There's one day we went to a post office. We haven't shown that bit yet. And so we're starting to show that some of the flashbacks. I'm thinking we didn't really need to see all this, really. Yeah. We're seeing sort of behind the scenes.
I think it's really they're just finding ways. I mean, some of it is plot relevant and quite interesting, but some of it is just ways to keep John Tobin involved.
Exactly,
and working,
yeah.
Because he's quite compelling, whereas no one else really
and
is.
And also, and I think we're ruining nothing here, but he was sort of killed off a few films ago.
In the third one.
So as a result, to keep him in it, they've sort of got to... Yeah. Well, in fact, one of the films, they kept him in it by having him as a corpse. They're just going, oh no, we contracted him for 12. how do we keep
Who
him in?
Who signed off on killing off the third one? Exactly. We didn't think this through.
We've shot ourselves in the foot a bit there. whoops.
Oh, along with a separate note, there's the plot for the seventh one.
There you are. Yeah. What, shooting yourself in the foot? Yeah. Oh yeah, nice, yeah. Okay.
But it's... But that's, I mean, it does work, but that's why, like this one, I was watching it and I was interested. I mean, the flashbacks kind of interested me, and there's kind of two angles of this one going on at the same time. And the one relating to people we've seen before, I found quite interesting, and seeing how that's going to pan out. But I wanted a film of that.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the main story with the guy and traps and blood and gore, I was thinking, well, it's kind of irrelevant, really.
Yeah.
I mean, we're seeing it all pan out, and it's keeping the gore fans happy. But in terms of actually plot-related stuff, you could almost deal with what happens in a sentence and then get on with the film.
But so tell me, what if it was a fraction of how good the first film was, what fraction would it be?
Because I'll say a quarter.
Really? Not good enough for me, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
there's also moments that I felt it didn't quite play by its own rules as well. There's certain games, in inverted commas, where I don't feel the person's always meant to be given a fair chance.
Yes.
And to realise, you know, their sin and, you know, find a new way to live. And it's always about choosing to live or die.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of them where they didn't choose to live or die, really. They either chose for someone else or...
It's when it's two people against each other.
Yeah.
That sort of seems to violate the rules. Because it should... I mean, I mean, the classic example is his future protege in one of the first or second film, where she's got the big thing trapped in her head.
Yes, yeah.
And that's, you know, as a solo game, she's going to make the effort, gets it off, she wins. But then if it's two people against each other, as happens once or twice in this, you say, well, one of you is going to die. And it doesn't matter, you may, by the end of it, they might have had a new appreciation for life, what they've gone through, but they're still dead.
And the nice thing was, there always used to be that he always said he'd never killed anyone. He gave other people the option to do that. But by saying it's one of you, he is sort of, he's definitely... Yes. Definitely killing someone. Just doesn't know which one yet. But the clever ones were when actually he didn't quite kill them, but they could choose to get out of it if they wanted to. They'd just be horribly disfigured forever.
Which actually is why, I mean, touching on Saw 5 briefly, because having seen that last weekend, I preferred Saw 5. It's also it's almost quite self-contained as
it
well, because it picks up straight after Saw 4. So you will have need to see that. But that makes a lot more sense, because rather than, I mean, it's one guy working his way through things, but in a relevant way, as opposed to this, which is just a sort of bolted-on thing. Yeah, the traps we see in Saw 5, you get to the end of it, and then you suddenly... I mean, again, it's not a twist as such, but like I say, you suddenly think,
together,
it
makes some sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, if they thought about it, they actually could have all worked.
Into it. Yeah, exactly. Is that the one that's got Julie Benz in it as well?
It does,
Dexter?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. But I think... to be honest, all of this is largely irrelevant because you, the listener, have decided if you like the Saw films, you'll have seen the Saw films.
No one is going to suddenly think Saw 6. Well, it's got to 6. Maybe I'll give them a go.
I'll start now. Yeah.
I think you're more likely to just peter off into you saw the first three and then I've lost interest.
Hello, Peter.
Yes, or you'll just have seen them all, no matter what. Get the worst reviews in the world, and you'll still see it. Although this is the worst performing of the six, except possibly the first one, in terms of opening weekend box office.
It's not really selling it, is it?
Yeah. Well, no, but that's mainly because of Paranormal Activity, which is a film.
There's a film rather than just...
All the cinemas are haunted.
It turned up.
But that's apparently very good, and so all the horror fans were kind of divided on that. But, I mean, I say the worst performing, it's still... going mostly from memory, I think opening weekend was something like $18 million right. for Saw, mm-hmm. okay. which is about what the first one made.
Yes.
But it cost $11 million to make.
Is that right?
Yeah.
There you are.
They're gonna
keep making them.
And marketing will cost a bit more, but then yeah. you've got DVDs.
They'll keep making them,
weeks.
And to be fair, I'll keep seeing them. And I look forward to reviewing yeah. the same one this time next year. And
almost exactly the same,
same, same opinion.
It's yeah. fine, there's a bit of gore. Yeah, no, but then it's just enough plot to make me think.
Exactly.
I think it's the difference between that and the Hostel films. In the Hostel is just people being tortured and dying.
Yeah.
And there's there's enough plot to get people into a room and get tortured to death.
Yeah. Mm.
Whereas with Saw films, there's enough plot going on around it to make me think, no, I'm still kind of interested in how it's going.
Yeah. Okay.
I was chatting to a comedian last week who is a big fan of the Saw films. In fact, his ringtone is the music that always comes in at the end of the Saw film. Yeah, exactly, the threatening stuff, yeah. Which means that whenever he answers the phone, he goes, hello, where are you? But we were talking about, could you do a stand-up comedy show based around the Saw films? In that, what you do is you're in like an enclosed, like Edinburgh Festival type small venue, and at the end of the film, you sort of, you know, you set up some elaborate trap that you imply the audience are then part your pawns for this. And then you sort of go, you know, game over, just walk out, slam the door, the lights go down, and just lock them in. So it might work.
And then set fire to the place.
Exactly. Yeah.
You couldn't really do a month-long run.
You could have, exactly. It'd be a one-off spectacular, yeah. I think. You know, but anyway, we should probably crash on because we have lots else to witter on about. But there you go, that's all.
Yeah, so it's all fine. Yeah. Yeah, if you want to go and see it, then you'll go and see it. Exactly.
Might see the others first.
Yes.
So,
oh yeah, yes, you absolutely need to have seen all of the other films. In order to really
in the
go
world,
with it. Yes, every film ever made.
It's going to be a long wait.
Right, it's time for In This Week in Movie History.
Ta-da!
Oh yes, okay.
I'm not looking.
It's a little bit League of Gentlemen.
We didn't burn exactly. It's like Pavlov, isn't it? Sort of like, I know I'm going to be here in a minute. I didn't. I'm not looking. Okay, here are some events. You tell me the movie. It's that simple. Okay. October 27th, 1985. A car is run over by a train.
Back to the Future 3.
Correct.
I think I was there first.
But I think you said 3 thoughts before you start. I think you started saying it, but then you
so
finished
I'm
saying it.
Three.
Quicker. So we'll call it a draw.
Yeah.
October 29th, 1929. George Bailey and Mary Hatch marry. The Bailey Building and Loan manages to stay open with only $2 left.
It's a wonderful life.
It is a wonderful life.
Aww.
And what was the film?
I don't know.
Never mind. October 30th, 1929. Lyle Atwood and an unknown man jump from a Wall Street skyscraper. They vanish before Lyle reappears and lands on a car, dead.
That's going to be...
Oh, I don't know.
Time Cop.
Correct. Bad
that's
that
a boys' a film,
it's
isn't
a boys
it?
Film.
It is
yeah,
a boys'
film.
As opposed to the Back to the Future 3, which is, of course, a very girly
is...
film.
It's... Got
tilted
Michael J.
in his favour, I'm afraid, this week, Jen. Sorry about that.
Okay,
October 30th, 1988. A boy's countdown stops and his life ends when a plane engine lands on his house.
1988.
Donnie Darko.
Donnie Darko.
Oh!
That's right. Okay, we're getting a bit Halloween-y now. A little bit Halloween-y. Okay.
Is it Halloween?
Halloween!
just a little bit Halloween. October 31st. 1897. Quincy Morris is killed in battle and a European nobleman dies by the hand of Mina Harker.
Oh, it's going to be Dracula, isn't
no.
it?
No.
Yeah.
By whom?
Oh, goodness me. I'm going to say the Frankenstein one.
Someone's Dracula?
Bram Stoker's
Dracula. Yeah.
I think it was Mary Shelley. Why was I saying it anyway?
Mary Shelley's
is it
Dracula.
Because you're a little bit stupid.
I am.
Oh.
Good. Okay, October 31st. October 31st, 1940. The RAF battle with the German Luftwaffe comes to an end. It's not very Halloween-y, this one, to be honest. It's just a war film.
Is it the Battle of Britain?
It's the Battle of Britain.
Oh, very
yeah, well done. Very good indeed. And finally, for this week, October 31st, 1978. A murderer at Haddonfield, Illinois, murders aplenty and may or may not die himself.
Halloween.
Hey!
We were
that
right.
was very Halloween-y. So well
Halloween.
Done. Good, I think someone got all of those right, so well done.
Yes.
So, providing you're working as a team, you
good
win.
Team go. Yeah.
All very good.
Well done, teammate.
Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yes.
I haven't seen this.
Have you not?
I haven't, because I'll tell you why I haven't seen it, and then you can,
okay,
you know,
go on
you
then.
Can spout your nonsense.
If I can just get a guesswork.
Yeah.
If you're going to have the reason If you're going to give the reason I think you're going to give, yep. knowing you as I do,
yep.
you're probably right.
Yeah, fair enough.
But say it again.
Okay. Say it again. My reason is because it's directed by Wes Anderson.
There you go.
And I abhor all of his work. there is no other director I can think of who just makes me not want to see it. Because this is the guy who did Life of Craddock with Steve Zissou
yes.
and The Royal Tenenbaums and things that claim to be comedies and aren't. And they're all very talky and very sweet, and Gwyneth Paltrow is always in them, and it's just annoying.
No, but talky and sweet I'm fine with, but he somehow makes them dull.
They're just boring! Fair,
he did say, I read an interview with him recently, and he did say something along the lines of, I can take an idea... I think a really commercial idea and turn it into something no one wants to see.
Exactly! I'm glad that he's on the same wavelength as me on this one.
I haven't seen those, to be fair.
And I saw the trailer of Phantom of Mr. Fox, and it seemed to be quite similar in a way, but in a kid's film,
no,
which
it is
really
yeah.
odd.
It is, it's odd that way. It's probably the most accessible Wes Anderson film,
yeah.
and it is a kid's film, but, well, I saw it with Jen, and we, admittedly, we're both quite tired, but we both almost fell asleep at one point.
There was just a lull, really? Just about...
Oh. Sort of about two-thirds, yeah,
yeah,
towards the end.
Three-fifths at the end.
Well,
it was
we both
like,
suddenly just thought, whoa, yeah,
we're
okay,
really
we're not
tired.
Quite. Yeah, and even when I am tired, that no, most films don't do that to me.
Yeah.
But, it's not that it's a boring film.
No, it's not.
In and of itself, but it doesn't quite... Like other Wes Anderson's art, it doesn't quite sit right.
Yeah.
I sort of enjoyed it while I was in it, and then as soon as I came out, I was thinking, nah. I'm hard pushed now to think of any really compelling bits of it.
Right.
I mean, it's an interesting enough story, and
well,
I remember I like the book.
I like the book. I'm a big
Roald
Dahl fan.
And there are bits of it. I mean, they've tweaked it a bit.
Mm.
Yeah,
but the broad sweep of it is still quite similar.
Yeah.
So as much as I can remember it from having last read it probably about 20 years ago,
mm.
but I mean, it still covers the same sort of material. But yeah, it just doesn't quite. It didn't quite grab me.
No.
I'm going to start off with the animation. I thought the animation was great. I thought it was utterly charming.
So this is stop motion, isn't it? This is
yeah.
stop motion, Gromit
but it's but almost deliberately. It's not clunky, but it's quite stylized.
Yes.
But it really reminds me of like playing with figures as
but
a
nice
kid.
To see someone not doing the CGI thing, actually
yeah.
doing
oh, yeah.
it and moving it all by hand.
However, there are a couple of shots which are deliberately on facial expressions, and I couldn't quite work out what on earth it was trying to say.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of this weird grimace smile
yeah.
thing, and you don't
and
know
what the
nuance
is. And it may just
be it's
meant to be
is.
Funny, because it's a sort of slightly manic smile.
Or is it proper smile, or is it proper grimace?
Yeah.
Not quite clear enough. But in general, the style was great. I really, really liked
yeah.
it. And you instantly forget that it's stop frame, because it's just like, ah, this is the style, this is it.
Yeah, yeah.
And certain things like sort of clouds of smoke, basically it's done with cotton wool, but animated.
Mm.
And that's really quite nice looking, and I don't think I've seen that in stop motion before. They normally either use CGI to get the smoke or use something else.
Mm.
And so, but doing it just with clouds of cottony stuff.
Pluming.
Yeah. It's just quite nice looking.
Yeah.
But.
I think you compare it with other stop motion animation. I mean, it may be an unfair comparison, but you look at Wallace and Gromit, and that's just charming and sweet and funny.
Yes.
No matter what age you are.
And Coraline, which is quite dark and creepy
as well,
and brooding.
Which is fine, that does its thing as well. And also, you compare it to. It's half term week, so people are going to go and see Phantom of Mr. Fox. But also in the cinema, you've got Up and Cloud with a Chance of Meatballs, and they are both wonderful.
Yes, they are.
So I would rather see both of those again than going.
Yeah, I mean, Phantom of Mr. Fox it's not particularly funny. It's not unfunny, but it's not really gag heavy.
It's got a weird aspect to it, which I think we were talking about at the time, is that it's got this sort of adult dialogue, but with one word replaced, and that is cuss.
Yes. Yeah, they use the word cuss instead of a variety of swear words.
Yeah, but you can tell that they really mean the swear words.
As in, old cuss.
Yeah,
it's like,
as in,
are you cussing
with me? And
yeah, don't cuss with me, you cusser. And it's like...
Not quite, almost.
Yeah,
and it's if it was once or twice, it would make sense, because it was a kid's film, and certain bits of dialogue you get away with any swear words, but in the diet, if it would make sense, you use it once or twice. But they use it, not throughout, but... enough that it really draws attention to it and it doesn't quite make any sense. In a film which has lots of swearing, some people probably say, oh, we don't need the swearing. But in a big gangster epic, for example, you kind of it makes sense.
Yeah.
In this, you don't need, effectively, you don't need the swearing. So why... could have written that dialogue without it. So why use a word that is... If they had it full of swearing, that would kind of make sense.
Sure.
It wouldn't make it a kid's film, but it would work. But having this made-up word... Well,
it does look like he thought he was making an adult film or film for grown-ups.
Slightly.
In some ways, yeah. I think that
might be... It covers adult-y sort of... I mean, like, it's a Wes Anderson film in terms of dysfunctional family and the father doesn't... You know, make pay attention to what's going on, and the kid feels a bit abandoned. So it is adult-y in that sense. But yeah, which is why it's just it's an odd balance.
It's him that gave me a lifelong cautiousness with Jason Schwartzman.
It's weird actually, because
I've liked in other films now since.
He's growing on me slowly, but in this, he's actually, his character is actually my favourite. He's Ash, I think. Fantastic Fox's son. And he's got some of the best lines in it, and he's just got this very slightly dark, brooding, short, bitter character. But quite funny with his turn of phrase. And yeah, he was actually my favourite part.
To be fair, it's actually the combination. I mean, Jason Schwartzman, I can now, he's alright in Funny People and things like that. Bill Murray, obviously, can be very good as well. Owen Wilson can be very funny. Luke Wilson can be alright. Gwyneth Paltrow can be alright. But put them all together in a film, and that to me screams, "Where's Anderson? Run! Run for the hills!" So, you know, individually fine, but put them together, and no thank you.
There are a few, issues that come up, relationship things, that I want to, you want to explore a little bit further, but one of them, which is pretty huge and definitely adult, is Foxy and his wife chatting, and it's all about, oh no, it's all gone horribly wrong. And then the last line of this conversation is just like, "I love you, but I wish I hadn't married you." It's like, what? This is a children's film, and that's the end of that. What? Hang on.
A bit heavy, a bit dark.
Even if they talked it through more, that makes sense.
But that's it. That was it. It's just next scene.
Oh well, and your ways.
Where's the vulpine romp that I paid my money to see? That's what I want.
It's like, hang on.
When I saw the trailer, I did make me want to go and see Chicken Run again.
Well, yes. That's the thing. I think, I don't want to begrudge him doing it. He clearly had a vision for making this film, and he's made what he wants to make, I think. But, as he said in the interview, I don't think that many other people really want to go and see it.
Yes.
And I think there was a much better version, that truer to the book and more fun, that could have been made.
However, I did really like it. I love the style. It's got this sort of grittiness to it, slightly indie, aspect to it. I would recommend going to see it because it's refreshing. But I don't know. I think it's just some of the script needed tweaking a little bit.
I think it could wait for a rental quite easily.
I will not even wait for that.
Well,
really?
That's it. No, I really don't think you'd be. I did kind of enjoy it, but my memory of enjoying it is fading rapidly.
Put it this way, I get to the point, because I suppose I've seen a few films in the cinema the last couple of weeks. Whenever that trailer comes on, I sort of go, I'll clock off for 2 minutes now. It's got nothing in the trailer that draws me in.
Oh.
Yeah.
And if I'm fed up with the trailer, I've got a mistrust of this guy. maybe I'm just alone in this, I don't know. Dear listener, if you like Wes Anderson, do let us know, and I will change my opinion. I'm that fickle.
But as you said, Up and Cloud with a Chance of Meatballs, definitely see them before this.
Okay.
Should we press on?
Yes.
I'm here.
Wonderful. Well, now, if we have judged this time right, we'll play in a clip of comedian Phil Butler talking about his favourite films.
Oh, cool.
Okay, I'm here with Phil Butler, top comedian, and also... creator of his own podcast, the Green Room podcast.
That's right. Hello.
Hello. And for a start, where can we get the Green Room podcast? How do we...
go to my website. Go to philbutler.co.uk.
Excellent. And
and also on iTunes.
And on iTunes. It's backstage.
Podcast Alley.
Backstage of Comedy Club, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, it's the backstage chat of all the comics and then clips of the show.
Wonderful. So some films then. Have you got a particular favourite, something you've seen recently or anything you can recommend for us?
I saw The Wrestler yesterday, which I really liked. I really thought it was good. What's his name? Randy the Ram.
Randy the Ram, yeah. Robinson, yeah.
I thought it was a great little movie. Very curious looking now, though, isn't he?
There's not much it seems he could do in the way of roles now. He's got to do the bizarre facially sort of.
And who's the girl on it?
The stripper. Yeah, Marissa Tomei. She was good, yeah.
Marissa Tomei, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
She played a very good part. I really enjoyed her part. Yeah. Yes. What else has she been in?
She's been in a bunch of stuff that is. I can never remember the stuff she's in, but it's sort of a lot of independent dramas, that sort of thing. But
right.
She was excellent in that, yeah. Mm. And Mickey Rourke in his Oscar speech. No, in his Golden Globe speech. Thank you for just being just great to look at naked.
Yeah, totally.
The film. Wonderful. Yeah.
Totally. I really enjoyed that. That was a really good movie.
And what's most recently in the cinema? What have you seen? Didn't you see? Was it
Most recently in the cinema? I think it was The Hangover.
Crank 2. Crank 2. That's right. You're saying that. Yeah.
Crank 2 was
High Voltage.
Yeah. No, I was in Afghanistan.
Doing the
gigs of the forces, and some of the lads. They put it on, and I tell you, I just could not understand what the hell was going on.
Really?
I really couldn't. I mean, this guy is he's gone in there and they've taken his heart and they've put some other thing in there that he's got to charge up, and he keeps getting into trouble. They keep taking it away, and then he has to charge up with a car battery, and he's making love in a stadium with a woman in the middle of the field. It just left me completely cold. Maybe I should have seen Crank 1.
Oh, yeah, if you haven't seen Crank 1, clearly that explains everything in backstory.
Yeah,
then,
sure.
Absolutely. It's textbook then, yeah. Good. Okay, and what about an all-time favourite or any particular ones from yesteryear that may particularly take your fancy at the minute?
I've always loved Flatliners.
Oh, yes.
With Kiefer Sutherland and...
Yeah, Kevin Bacon and
Kevin
Julia Roberts.
Yeah, Julia Roberts.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I'm not a Julia Roberts fan. Yeah. I've not liked anything that she's been in, I've got to say. I really don't like them. But I love Flatliners. I thought it was a great little story. And Billy Mahoney, the guy, the little kid who beats up Kiefer Sutherland, he's the scariest thing on TV.
He is, isn't he? God, that's brought by memories now, yeah.
Oh, man. You know, when he runs past the van and you just see him in the rear view, you know, in the rear view mirror there, there's a red hood going past. It's scary stuff.
It's before hoodie for fashionable as well.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, indeed.
Ahead of its time. Wow. Brilliant. Okay, well, thank you for that, Phil. And do check out Green Room Podcast as well.
So that was Phil Butler.
Hey.
Some fine choices there from a fine comedian. He's got a podcast himself, meant to add as well. The Green Room Podcast, which is backstage of the UK's comedy club. So can listen to that and you can hear interviews sort of just before and after we come on off
the stage. So it's kind of the reverse of this. As in, rather than just like a movie podcast with a couple of minutes of a comedian, all comedians.
Exactly.
And then they may talk about films.
I think they should get us on just as a like little tidbit.
Yeah. Well, presumably you've been
on. If you do a gig at Jonglers, they'll put you on. How about that? Well, they put me on. That's the thing. I went on his thing.
Oh, fine. So just ignore us.
Sorry. Yeah, you weren't available for that stag do gig, I'm afraid, so you wouldn't have liked it. Yes. So we've got a couple more films to talk about. Imagineer and Dr. Parnassus, Triangle, Your Emails, Desert Island Flicks, Best Horror Franchise, all that to come.
Wow.
But, sounds like you're going to say after these messages.
After these messages.
Hello.
Hello, Jeremy.
Right.
Imaginarium, should we do that?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Dr. Parnassus.
I wanted to go and see this.
Have you not seen it?
No, I haven't.
Go and see it.
She's
been busy.
What are you waiting for? What are you doing a podcast for? Go and see it.
Let's go and see it now.
No, maybe. Anyway, we'll talk about this later.
Having said that, go and see it. That's not really what I say, actually, to movie going public. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was artistically creative, innovative, inventive, all those sort of things. Was it his best work? I don't know.
I definitely don't think it's
his
best work.
Who's best work?
Terry Gilliam.
Right, okay.
It's definitely not Heath Ledger's best work, either.
No.
Heath Ledger is...
it's no one's best work.
No, but that's it. I mean, it's sort of similar to Fantastic Mr. Fox in that you can judge it on certain levels, but kind of the inverse, in that Fantastic Mr. Fox, you can sort of like the style, but just I was left feeling a little bit cold by it.
Yeah.
Whereas this is slightly light on plot, maybe, but the style
stories,
I loved so much.
I think Gilliam's not... I was thinking about this the other day. What's the difference between Terry Gilliam and Tim Burton? Hey. One's a spy and the other's... I don't know. I was thinking about this. You know, what is the difference? They certainly have, in the Venn diagram of Gilliam and Burton, there's a massive crossover.
Yeah.
Including Johnny Depp in the middle. And
well, that's true.
But I think Tim Burton probably has a better grasp of story.
Yes.
Whereas Terry Gilliam is probably a bit more in the inventive... just throwing random things. If I'm going to make a head that's like a ship that's actually, you know, becomes
yes.
a giraffe.
Yeah, I think...
It's more surreal, isn't it?
It is more surreal, yeah.
Yeah. Terry Gilliam may have slightly more creativity, in a weird sense, but at the cost of storytelling.
Whereas
Tim Burton's slightly more balanced.
Get together and do a film. That would be
interesting.
It would be the most deranged thing. But they are quite different styles.
I know, but that's why I'm saying put them together, see what happens.
There was a moment in Parnassus where... I forget what the scene was, but we sort of pan down, we zoom in, and we see some things, and it looked like Peter Jackson, Lord of the Rings territory for a second, of this massive citadel and clearly CGI, but going actually fair play, they've done some really good work on this. So for that moment, I thought it was a bit like Tim Burton meets Peter Jackson, along with some bonkers stuff in the middle. But yeah, I think while the story's not as captivating as it could be, I thought it was. Yeah, the visual flair made up for it.
Yes.
Do you think those problems are having to work around Heath Ledger?
Ain't no way at all. In fact,
no.
I think they dealt with the Heath Ledger problem, should we call it that, brilliantly. And you'd think that was part of the
story.
Original
idea. I think the only way it slightly hampers it is just that the performances are all a bit different. Because it's not... I mean, it's obviously the same character in terms of what they're saying and how he's dressed and interactions. But... he's not quite portrayed the same way. And he's meant to, because he's in different mysterious lands, and he's meant to look different and be a bit different, but they're not quite level.
But
it doesn't really count against it.
All on screen, sort of short enough. It didn't bother me too much as to how they were.
Yes.
How they were doing it.
No, that's right. If anything, I wish Johnny Depp's, because Johnny Depp has the shortest bit.
Yes.
And his was brilliant.
It was very good.
Yeah. There's one line he has, which isn't.
Yeah, he has one line.
No. There is one line that he has, which isn't. It's on paper. It's probably not remotely funny. And yet, it got the biggest laugh of any line I can, in recent times.
Right.
I'm now probably overselling it. But it was just, very good delivery. Yes. But Heath Ledger, he's fine, but he didn't blow anyone away. I think you watch The Dark Knight and you can think, oh, he got accolade for that, and rightly so. Watching this, if he was still alive, it would have been not forgotten as a film, but I don't think no one would have heralded it and say, look, this is him
and
going further.
I don't know if there's a campaign for Oscar nominations for Heath Ledger for this or anything.
I wouldn't have thought
but
so.
There shouldn't be, because it's not that sort of role. And as well as that, I think it's what I found a slight shame is that people are going to go and see this film because of the Heath Ledger factor.
Yeah.
And it's not a film for everybody, I don't think.
Oh, yeah. Definitely
and
not.
And so I think a lot of people are going to go and see him going, oh, well, we have to go and see Heath Ledger's last role. We have to. And they go out and go, well, it's a bit nuts, wasn't it? What happened there? Yeah. What's the story? Where's the car chases? What's going on? So there's a bit of that going on.
Right.
Yes. I mean, he's not weak or anything, but he's average, not in a bad way, but he's fine, but he's just nothing special. But
I think it would have made a great art house movie in that sense, and sort of, put it on a small screen sort of thing, and make it for the Gilliam fans.
Mm.
But this is, I think, Terry Gilliam's ongoing problem, that he sort of makes these obscure art house movies, but with such an imaginary budget that he has to make it as a blockbuster, because he can't afford to otherwise. This is why Baron Munchausen was one of the, most financially disastrous film of all time, I think it was. And then equally, he tried to make Don Quixote, and that was, just ransacked by even God, but just throwing storms at him, saying, I'm going to destroy your budget. And this happened, Brazil, and he had a big battle with the studio. Again and again, there seems to be this curse of Gilliam, although he always says that he's lucky rather than unlucky. Mm. It's lucky that he comes through and makes all these films.
Which is true. And we're lucky that they are out there, because no one else really touches him
but
on that regard.
The trouble is, this is going to do him, I think, once again, no favours in terms of convincing the next studio to give him more money for the next film, because they sort of. You can see it all on the screen. There's this absolutely crazy stuff he does with it all. But
I do wonder if the rise of... because this has got a lot of CGI in it, but not in a bad way, because it's all so fantastical it makes sense.
Yeah, it has to be. You could not make all that on a studio.
But I do wonder if that may help him, as computer effects get better and cheaper. He can sort of create these fantasy worlds relatively cheaply and stick people in them, and which may drop his budgets down a bit.
Because there's some nice ideas with the CGI stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The river that becomes a snake and things like that. And
there's a very Monty Python-esque bit with all the dancing policemen.
Oh, that's true.
Which I wasn't expecting. That's quite
true, And there's the ladder walking thing. Just odd things like that they sort of work. Mm. And they're odd. And they're bonkers. Like a gang of thieves running to their mother.
Oh, yes.
Just in a weird... that's ruining nothing, because it's all just... Yeah. Delightfully odd.
Yeah.
Yes. Delightfully odd, yeah.
Which I always... I mean, it's the same reason I like Tim Burton films, in that the mental creativity always appeals to me.
Yes.
And so... Which is why, even though the film is a bit weak on plot, there's enough... I mean, there's a relative lull about a third of the way through, a bit further way through, when there's no fantasy travelling bit at all, and it's mainly just them in the real world having a chat. And for me, that then starts dipping down. It makes the weaknesses more apparent.
Yeah.
And you just think, no, get back to the bonkersness.
Yes.
But does it make you like it more when it does?
It just makes me like it as much as I did before.
It is quite. He's dealing with quite big themes here about the devil and bargaining your soul the one bit of the story I did quite like is this element of the gamble, that this guy, Dr. Parnassus, can't resist a gamble with the devil. And there's still these sort of chances of, well, when's it going to happen, and what's he going to do, and that sort of thing. Lily Cole, isn't it, as well?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Well, apparently, he's apparently gives the best performance
in the film.
I thought she
was very good, actually.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And the other guy in it, whose name escapes me, but the guy who's already working for Dr. Parnassus before he turns up. He's very good as well.
Lily Cole, actually, to be fair, she's She could be a model with those looks. She's very good.
Well done. Thanks. actually, one other thing. Heath Ledger's accent did slip a bit.
Yeah, I noticed a bit, of Australian coming
in
at some point.
To the extent that I was thinking, if they just made him, like in 10 Things I Hate About You, where he's sort of a weird mix of American and Australian.
Yeah, yeah.
And someone at one point just says to him, you know, the accent, is that real? He said, yeah, I lived in Australia for a couple of years. Mm. And that, fine, just explained away. And in this, he's meant to be quite London Cockney, but with bits of Australian suddenly, slipping through.
Well, I wondered, when I saw that scene, it did make me wonder if that was one of the last scenes they filmed and then didn't get a chance to reshoot because he wasn't around for the rest of it. But,
no, that's true. Or else maybe there was a line explaining the accent, but then when they had other people come in who couldn't do Australian Aussie mix, they just had to go with it.
Possibly. It doesn't seem... I mean, it seems a bit of an excuse or how convenient. Mm. I mean, if you can't do the accent, try better.
I think he's missed his chance.
Yeah, I think I know. Yeah. Not to speak ill, but this
is the thing. That's why it's weird. We feel we need to excuse it because he's now died. I think the expectations for this film being it's his last film, it should be his crowning achievement, and it's not. Which isn't a criticism in and of itself. It just happens to not be the best thing he's ever done.
It's just his work in progress, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So but it's a phenomenal film, and I think it's well worth a watch, regardless.
Well, I'm looking forward to going and seeing it. I'm still really looking forward to going and seeing it.
Oh yeah, no, you should, because it's creatively brilliant.
Good.
Agreed. Your emails!
Shall we?
So we've had emails this week from a first-time emailer, long-term listener, first-time emailer. This is from Richard. Hello, Richard.
Hello.
Richard said, I first learned about the podcast while seeing Paul at Teddington Studios.
Really?
Sounds like I was making a film. I wasn't. I was doing warm-up.
Were you begging outside for change?
Yeah, I was. Serving in the canteen. So that's how he found the podcast. Lovely. Thank you indeed for tuning in, Richard. Says that he looks forward to the podcast every time it comes out. Makes the drive to and from work much more entertaining, even though it's only 25 minutes. Is the drive not the podcast, I assume?
Oh, I see.
Oh,
we talk on for longer.
It's longer than that.
No, but to and from means 25, that's 50 minutes round trip.
Yeah.
So that's probably about right.
That'll do it. Won't go on too much, but just to say we've gone cinema crazy this week, seen four films at the cinema four times in 4 days, only paid for half of them. Harry Brown, I saw the trailer for that last week.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. That does.
Looking forward to that.
Okay.
Saw that. Law Abiding Citizen, which looks all right.
I'm quite looking forward to that, actually, because deranged serial killers appeal to me.
Yes.
cinematically, not up close and personal.
Yeah, Gerard Butler, I'm still waiting for his good film, but...
This probably won't be it, but it does... The idea looks quite interesting.
I'm a bit miffed that Richard says he saw Law Abiding Citizen on Tuesday in Guildford, which is where we are.
Yeah.
And he got a free... How did you get a preview screening?
Please do tell us how you got free screening.
Are you on some list or something? Hell, do tell us.
Richard. He may be on the same website that we signed up to.
That's true, but we just didn't get it.
But still.
They saw Mamma Mia as well.
He didn't invite us either.
It's rude, isn't it? Rude. And saw Six. And just got stickers of Avatar at the London IMAX. Woohoo! Rock and roll.
Yes. Avatar, it's weird. The IMAX is probably... I may make the trip to the IMAX to go and see Avatar. Because I feel it's designed for it, it's probably worth seeing.
Yeah.
The first trailer underwhelmed me quite a lot. But the second trailer, which is out in the cinemas, and I think it's now online as well, is a lot better. And does a far better job of telling the story and showing
what's going on. Yeah, the first trailer did nothing.
No, the first trailer is like, there's lots of cartoony aliens going. Mm. Yeah. And the second one actually makes you care and spells out, this is the story, this is what's going on. And you think, that sounds like quite an interesting idea.
Okay.
Email from Johan. This is on our Desert Island Flicks a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about the best Pixar film.
Ah, yes.
Uh-huh.
And for Johan, it's Finding Nemo. Seen it so many times with my nephew. Absolutely love it. Also liked Wally. So, good. It's a tie.
See, Finding Nemo I own and haven't seen it for a long time. But I remember it being very good. I just haven't actually watched it for a while. I should.
Still haven't got Wally back, by the way. Just want to mention that.
Because I was mentioned a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
For still the person who has it.
Give it back.
Do they
listen to the podcast?
Or is it you're just using this as a...
Yeah, I'll talk about the podcast. I can't make them listen to it.
I haven't seen
them enough to get the DVD back.
Yeah, but if all you're doing is you've told them you do a podcast and you're telling them to return the DVD on the podcast...
I'm just sending out the vibe.
Maybe cut out the middleman and just ask them for it back.
I have.
Oh,
fair enough. That's good.
Super Toys, an email from, saying, after already dismissing Where the Wild Things Are, because I didn't want to see a 2-hour adaptation of a 10-sentence book.
Fair enough.
I can see his point on that. Mm. So the look of the film is nice, but who cares? I was foaming at the mouth, just waiting to blow off Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. It's a children's book he's adored since he was a wee lad. But alas, after hearing the Bantercast crew... I do like Bantercast.
The Bantercast. Bantercast. I like the Bantercast crew as well.
Bantercast
After hearing the Bantercast crew rave about it, I might queue it up from Netflix. Which I think is well worth doing, personally.
I think it's a fine movie.
It really, really was good. Fantasia, no words in that film. I was a very disappointed child when I realised that. And while looking for some good scary movies for Halloween, I'm going with John's Eden Lake.
That was my
Eden Lake.
It was
actually Paul's Eden Lake, but never mind.
I had nothing to do with it, I hasten to add, just seeing it.
He said, I'll report back. Yes. I would love more Mr. T impressions from Mr. P.
Go on,
Fool! Email from Blair says, hello to the best banterers of Britain.
Oh,
pip, best pip.
Gotta love alliteration.
Greetings from Blighty. I've loved the last few podcasts, especially the 50 films in 50 minutes edition. Good. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see some more of those sometime. We can do that for you.
Just do the same one again.
Listen to it again. And we don't have to put the effort in.
Good point. I agree the opening of Up is the best part of the film. Oh. And the film's assert is starting to rediscover the art of telling a story without words.
Mm.
I thought the same thing about the opening to Watchmen.
Yeah, very true. Actually, and Zombieland as well. Had a very good
opening. Yeah, they did as well.
Didn't really tell a story as such, but it did set it up nicely.
Yeah.
I would very much also like to see the return of the segment. You debuted several weeks ago where you pitched films in new and misleading ways.
Yes, of course. I
fully endorse Paul's suggestion to call the segment Pitch Slapping. Doesn't really make sense, but it sure is fun to say. I'll agree with that. So we could do that again, couldn't we?
I did enjoy that.
But the whole point, we wanted to put it out there for people to send their own ones in, as opposed, you know. So you can do that. You can just, you know, invent a pitch in a different way and then,
Miss us a film.
Yeah. Exactly, and see if we can work out what it is.
Basically, if you wanted to take your wife to go and see Saw 6,
how would you persuade her? Well, it's about a family, and it's a coming together, you know, touchy-feely sort of piece.
Very up close and personal.
It is.
And very gory. Oh, no, not... depends on your wife's taste.
Well, very true, but if you're going to pitch it as a horror film, that's kind of missing the point of the thing.
Yes.
Fair enough. In regards to Paul's request for DVDs to rent, I must highly recommend Into the Wild, if you've not already seen it. Well, I have, actually, but I would recommend it to you guys.
I know of it, but I haven't seen it.
It's a great true story of a man who travels across America, and I also recommend the book of the same name, which I'm currently reading. Well, we're not interested in books
here. No, sorry, you're in the wrong place.
Book banter. You really keep coming in here with your words.
Oh, exactly, shocking. Luddites! I also recommend the coming-of-age film 13, which is very interesting, despite leaving me feeling quite depressed for several days after.
That's why I've avoided it, because I get the feeling it would just depress me.
Yeah. And also Speak, which is a small US independent film that may be difficult to track down, but certainly is worth a watch.
Oh, intriguing.
There you go. Yeah. Worth a look. Keep the movies a-coming and the banter a-flowing. We shall do our best, Blair. He signs off Blair, or as you called me last time you read out one of my emails, Blair the Chubby Chaser. Nice to see a return to the good old days of you ridiculing the emailers, even if I didn't involve suggesting I was dead or related to a serial killer. That's what we did earlier.
I'm sure there was a reason we called Blair the Chubby Chaser.
I think this is why we haven't ever had the listeners we could in the weeks like 1 to 5. Anyone who emailed the show, we imply they're either dead or related to a serial killer.
Did Blair maybe say something nice about Jen, and so he just assumed he must be a Chubby Chaser?
Probably. That's the most logical reason.
It does make sense, doesn't it?
Thanks.
That's right. Fatty.
And now from a girl.
Final one for this week. Oh, we could do more, but we've got so many. We've got so many. Email from Amanda, who says, a few apps behind at the moment, so that's this is why it's taken a few
weeks. It's okay.
It's all right.
That's fine. It's all right. There's no right.
You can we'll wait.
It's the wonders of podcasts. You can mix and match. Pick and choose.
We'll wait right now for you.
Go on.
Oh, forget it. So Amanda says, sorry this has been sorted already, but I think your podcast is fine without jingles. Now, this is true. We were talking about the jingle thing. Should we have jingles or not? Jingle jangle. Now then. That's a Jimmy Savile impression for the international guests.
Yeah, exactly. Well done.
Thanks. She says that in other podcasts she listens to, she skips past them to get into the talking. So that's quite keen. If you've got a 3-second jingle, no, I've got to fast forward those 3 seconds.
We live in a fast-paced world.
We do.
No time for jingles.
Keep up the great work. My favourite episode so far has been episode 38. Well, I liked 38 as well.
I
can't remember what was in it. Oh, yes, here we are. when you're talking about Pelham 123's cop car crashes, haven't laughed so hard in ages.
I have to say, she's not wrong. After I got that email, I went back and thought, I remember that, quite enjoying that, and listened to it, and did actually laugh myself.
Really?
It is quite an insane
I do recall making myself just a little bit of sick in the back of my throat from that much vomiting. Vomiting will make that little bit of sick in the back of the throat. That's generally
that's a little bit of sick. Vomiting, you tend to get quite a lot of sick in the back of your throat. And then it rapidly accelerates forwards.
I've got that little bit of sick. Why could that be? Oh, yeah, I've just been sick. That's why. Not so much the laughter causing that, is it, really?
I think it's about 47-ish minutes in to episode 38, just from memory. But
I have to have another lesson.
Oh, dear.
Another lesson.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, thank you for your emails. You may send more to us, podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
Or tweets as well.
Indeed, do tweet us.
At moviebanter, yes. On the world of Twitter.
Do send us your teats.
Yes.
Yes, you can tell us about anything you like, but in the meantime, we're going to go on to Desert Island Flicks shortly. One quick mention of Triangle, which is a movie that has been out this week. Well, this is the annoying thing. It came out, and I heard the review about it, and I read the blurb, and I thought, yes, I'm going to go and see this film. And I have been gigging up and down this country for a week, and I've really struggled to find in any cinema. And I understand if they say, oh, well, we'll only put it on in the major cities or in a few cinemas. But even the major cities couldn't. The one that was even worse than that was a film called Pontypool, which is set in a Canadian radio station, and it's all set in the radio station, and it's like a zombie film, what's going on outside, but it's the DJ reporting it, saying we're hearing rumours. But it's quite claustrophobic in that you don't know what's actually going on outside. Is it a hoax? Is it real? So it sounded a nice pitch. There was a big review of this on Mark Kermode's radio show, saying, oh, this is a really good film, go and see it. And I looked it up, and it's on twice in two cinemas in the entire country. That's it. It's on in Leeds twice in the week, and it's on in London in one cinema in London twice in the week.
That's rubbish.
Even though it's art house movies, normally 15 London cinemas will show it. But yeah, I didn't think it was quite deserving of all the airtime he gave for it to be on in four different showings. But worth a look on DVD, so I hear. But Triangle, yes, eventually tracked it down. It's Melissa George stars in this.
Yes,
and it's set on a boat, yachting disaster sort of crash, and there's like five friends all on a boat. It capsized sort of thing, and they're looking to be rescued. Ocean liner appears. They go, hey, someone's here to help us, wonderful. And they get on, and then all is not what it seems.
Ooh.
And then it sort of becomes a bit like The Shining on a boat, I suppose.
Oh, okay.
Mucking around with time. Are they alone on the boat? Are they not? They sort of bump into... Is that themselves they've bumped into there? Is it not? Is it? There's a message on the... they try and call the Coast Guard and they speak to someone and later in the film, but is that not them receiving their own message? Really interesting stuff. Really... It's the British writer-director who made Severance and Creep.
Okay.
And which are both a bit more formulaic horror films. Both good, I think. But this one, I think, is his best work, and I think shows something special because... plays around with time in a really interesting way. A bit like Primer. In that you've got to keep your wits about you to work out where you are.
Yeah, it's not really explained.
And it's left a lot hanging, but it's really interesting. And there's another film we saw called The Nines.
A while ago, which played
around with things like that.
Yeah.
Well, and again, I think you'd like it. It's not for everyone this Halloween, which is probably why it's not on in so many films. But for me, it's far better than Saw 6 or Halloween 2 or anything. I think if you're going to find a scary movie in the cinema to go and see, again, it's not too scary, but it's just really intriguing, interesting, dark, and plays around with a fun way with these sort of things.
But there's no chance of seeing it.
I think it's going to be a DVD rental because it's not going to be in many screens.
Don't want to wait.
I know.
Although there is in our cinema a poster up for it, but
really?
They don't seem to be showing it.
Okay.
This is what you could have won.
Well, yeah. They'll show it.
Well, I'll go somewhere else and watch this.
That probably means they'll show it as a one-off senior screen.
Yeah.
Just for the old people.
We'll have to have a look out for that. I'd like to see that.
That may be a director's chair 11 a.m. You know, special.
Exactly. Worth a look.
Actually, may just briefly
yes.
Touch on one DVD that we watched, just so Jen can get a mention in, Bottle Shock.
Ah, yes.
Bottle Shock, which was out last year and got it on DVD finally. And it's a weird one where I was quite keen to see it anyway. And then it turned out Jen wants to see it because it's got Chris Pine in it.
Ah,
yes.
I knew there'd be a reason.
Yes. But it's just very interesting. It's based on a true story and seems to be true-ish to life.
Yeah.
Which is, in the 70s, there was a competition between Californian and French wines hosted by a British wine expert who lives in Paris.
Played by Alan Rickman.
Yes, who set it up really to plug his own business.
Right.
And set out thinking, well, I think it's the bicentennial of the American independence.
Okay.
But he was sort of thinking, well, yeah, why bring the countries together? The French will win, obviously, but it's a good sport.
Yeah.
And went over to California and thought, actually, they're all quite good wines here.
Yeah, yeah.
So brought them back.
Well, it's a true story, isn't it? I remember hearing about this,
And it's just the telling of that.
Okay, interesting.
And with a couple of bits tweaked, but nothing too radical.
Yeah.
And so you see Bill Pullman runs a vineyard, Which ends up being the sort of main focus of the California Mines.
Yeah.
And it's just how it all panned out. And what's involving in the I mean, it's interesting now because we're in a world where wines from all over the world are quite popular. But you're seeing at the time when the French won and the Californians were really struggling, from the look of it anyway, to get their wines recognised worldwide.
Mm.
And the, as they say in the film, say, if one of us wins, we all win, which is true. And so, yeah.
Yeah,
so
it's a lovely emotive speech at the end with Alan Ritten saying, you know, we're going to get wines from maybe even like South America.
Australia.
No way. It's impossible.
Yeah, and it's we just take it all for granted now. It's a good film. It deals with nice relationship issues with father and son and other things. And makes you really want to go and drink some wine.
And watch Chris Pine.
Yes, but also from a bloke's point of view, it's got Elijah. Oh dear! No.
It's going to negate any time I mention anything with Chris Pine. You're going to be like, oh yeah, you just like because he's pretty.
We try and undermine you in every available opportunity.
Yeah, but he gives a very good performance.
No, he is good in this.
He's very good. That's
and but also from the bloke's point of view.
That's why it's so lovely.
From the bloke, from the bloke's point of view, you've also got the Rachel Taylor, who's the hot Australian from Transformers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Who I've never seen her in anything else beyond those two films. And also Elijah Dushku, who plays a barmaid.
A very, very dry, owner. Witty. Yes, barmaid. Yeah,
she's fruity.
Fruity, yeah.
She's almost too famous for the size of part she has in this, but she ends up being more pivotal than you think.
Yeah, it's a nice.
And chances are she was just kicking around in California. I could do this for a few days. Worth a watch.
Fair enough. Do you want to? Should we? I see you've got some other things here. Do you want to mention those?
I think.
Should we do them in like a word each?
I think. We could race through because we've piled up films.
So we'll race through some other quick DVDs with just a sentence each thing. We haven't got time to do the lot. So Planet Terror,
brilliant, complete, overblown zombie bonkersness.
Good, like to see it. I haven't seen it yet. Want to?
Better than Death Proof.
Oh, really? Yes. Good.
Oh, much so.
Hot Fuzz.
I hadn't seen this for ages and felt the urge again. Very gory. I had a very gory weekend when I saw that. Very, very funny. I've forgotten quite how good.
Yeah, I've
it
only
is.
Seen it once actually. I'd like
there
to see
are.
It again.
I remember at the time largely thinking not quite as good as Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, exactly.
But now you can kind of separate the
two.
Now
you know it's.
And
not,
there
you
are also, especially when Simon Pegg goes to see a performance of Romeo and Juliet. Right. His facial expressions through that are phenomenal.
Species 3,
that was just on TV. Right. It was just. I only added it because it's part of that horror day I had because there were films on. Oh, it was awful. Really, really was. Just don't. I mean, Species 1, Species 2, oh dear. And 3, why?
Yeah, just really.
And there's a fourth as well.
Oh, no. Stop, please.
Yeah. Blade Trinity, I saw half of.
Yeah.
And again,
half of?
It was on TV again, caught the end of it. Mm. And it just wasn't... I was reminded of how I like it. If it wasn't a Blade film, I'd like it more. It's far too funny for a Blade film.
Right.
There are very funny bits in it, but they mainly... You sort of laugh and then think, but why? It doesn't... What? Yeah. It just... It's very
It's not
odd.
As funny as the fourth Blade film, Blades of Glory. But,
I think it was, or the fourth Blade film, Blade Goes to Prison for Tax Evasion, which is incredible. slightly truer than life.
It's like Ernest Goes to Jail, isn't it? It's one of those sort of films.
But did you mind? You see, Ryan Reynolds is funny in it. And Wesley Snipes is funny in it. But that's the thing, people are funny in it. And it's like, well, no, Blade should be... You should have sort of two jokes, maybe, in a Blade film, which are funny because they're out of place. You shouldn't just have a flurry of gags. It's just a bit weird.
Mm.
I saw Lakeview Terrace.
That's the Samuel L. Jackson racism.
Sort of cop. No, not too racist, but it's
I thought it was sort of inverted racist. Doesn't he basically hate him because
he's white? A little bit, yeah. It's more, to be honest, that's putting too much on it that it's not really, you know, there's a bit of that there. But it's really just, it's a bit like those Unlawful Entry and those films you get from the 80s and 90s when Michael Douglas is the bad neighbour next door or the bad cop or, you know, there's those sort of
just sort of persecution things.
Yeah, I mean, this film is not a bad film for late night TV. That's where it belongs, to be fair. But then that's when most people watch the films, so fair enough.
No,
and finally Taken,
which I'm very keen to see.
Yeah, Liam Neeson, it's rubbish.
Oh yeah,
but it's gloriously rubbish.
Oh, that's why glorious rubbish. I have a lot of time for.
Yeah, it's
is it as utterly racist as you as
I heard? I think I blinked and I missed the French policeman walk around with a baguette under his arm. I was looking
not so much that bit, more in terms of the general go to Europe and everyone.
It's
will
really
kill you.
Worrying in what it says about Albanians. It's really just and it's I mean it, you know it's fair enough in a film you could get a character saying, oh, my daughter's being kidnapped by Albanians, I therefore hate all Albanians. That's you could see that as a logical character thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What doesn't quite work logically is his daughter's been kidnapped and he goes, oh no, who's he been kidnapped by? Oh, I shall use my linguist friend to find out what language the kidnappers were. Oh, he listens to the recording. Oh, Albanian. They're Albanian, right. Okay, I should go to the Albanian part of Paris and ask an Albanian. And just walks in and just finds an Albanian, throws him against the wall and says, I'm looking for my daughter. And, of course, the guy ends go, oh, yeah, I know where she is. Yeah, yeah. We all know each other, all us Albanians. We're all equally nasty and we've all kidnapped your daughter. And it's just... That's a little bit much. Yeah. A little bit much.
And but maybe as time goes on and everyone, you know, is learning to accept everyone else, yeah, you're moving through the ranks of countries and groups of people, exactly, you can hassle more. And Albanians, they're on the list at the moment. Yes. Soon everyone will adopt Albanians and then
Albania, actually.
It'll come down to one village, just one bloke saying, him, yeah, exactly, he did everything.
Albania are known for being quite self-deprecating in that they've got a joke that their tourist board was meant to use, which was... come to Albania, your car has already arrived. As in, we've nicked it.
Yes.
But there is, if you do watch the film, though, there is this moment, everyone always says, who's driving the boat?
Oh, yes.
And, yeah, I did just spend that entire scene going, who is driving the boat? I've absolutely no idea. But it's kind of like, it's a Jack Bauer. I reckon whoever wrote this wrote a season of 24 and said, or as an idea, pitched it.
Yeah, it makes sense, Fox actually. Said, yeah, oh, Kim gets kidnapped.
Yes, and... they said, oh, no, we're not going to use that. Oh, I'll write my own film then. And he did, and this is it.
Yeah, so change the names, and then he's got, exactly, got taken.
Jobs are good.
Anyway. So, that's our DVD wrap-up. Desert Island Flicks.
Desert Island Flicks. Hey.
Desert Island Flicks.
Best horror franchise.
Ooh.
Who wants to get the horrible rolling?
Oh, that's a quiz
horrible
show I'd watch.
Oh, it's so horrible.
Hey!
Hey, the show has been bracketed by two appalling puns. Exactly, yeah. I'm sorry.
Okay, let me... Well, I'll be boring, because I'm going to start boring with, I think, probably the Saw films.
Don't really.
Well...
Or
you're a fan, aren't you?
Well, it's that or Final Destination, and Final Destination is a bit more fun.
Yeah,
but it dropped off with the last one. But then Saw's been dropping off for years.
Yeah, but then Final Destination, but I mean, like, even the Saw 6 still had stuff going.
Exactly.
For it.
I think in terms of what will, you know, if a new Final Destination film comes in the cinema, I'll probably go and see it. But there is a chance that I may run out of steam with that, whereas Saw, I can see myself always seeing Saw films.
Really?
As punishment for some last former sin in a previous life. But
just to really add to the pain.
Exactly. That's my own torture. I'm playing my own Saw torture game by watching every bad Saw film. But no, I do think the first few were quite original. And also, I've had a look through horror franchise lists and they're largely rubbish.
Yeah, they really are.
You know, Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, certain people of a certain age like those because it's 80s schlock thing. I've only seen the first one.
But I think they became formulaic and generic really quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Friday the 13th. I mean, Children of the Corn is, again, one of my... I mean, I like the first one was all pretty good and the second one's all right. Haven't seen 3 and 4. Couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
But there are so many... bad ones.
Yeah, I think it takes effort to keep a franchise interesting.
Yeah.
Which is what the Saw films have at least done, by and large. They've put more effort in than most.
Exactly.
But so, if you're going to make a franchise, you've got to put the effort in. I mean, if it's...
No, but that's why they keep existing, because horror films are cheap to make and people go and see
them
regardless.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm going to probably go with Saw, I think, and I'll think another one in the next 5 minutes.
And the first one is brilliant.
The first one is brilliant.
I was saying this to someone the other day who was just saying, oh, no, the Saw film, torture porn thing, oh, no, can't stand it. I said, no, really see the first one.
Yeah.
Because there are a couple of gory traps.
Yeah.
But they're kind of set up the character Jigsaw rather than being pivotal.
And it's not as gory as some of these other films.
No,
Saw,
definitely not.
Really, so.
Well, again, because it wasn't torture porn, wasn't really a genre.
Yeah, and
before.
I'd much rather see...
That's the accepted phrase.
That's what they call it. Yeah. But I'd much rather see the gore of the first Saw film than the gore of The Hills Have Eyes or
Hostel as well.
And also the ongoing racked up tension of something like The Hills Have Eyes, where it's constantly, oh no, just kill them or just run away or whatever.
The Lassie Syndrome.
The Lassie Syndrome. Exactly.
Oh, you suffer from that.
I do. Oh, I do.
Jen even suffered from that in Bottle Shock.
Really?
When there's an issue about like getting a bottle of wine to the competition.
Just Jen get in there!
Really? Yeah, collapsing in on herself. Yeah. Well, you know, it's just how the film will pan out. It's going to happen. Just relax. But
anyway. Yeah, but it was so inevitable that bit was going to happen. It's just do it already! Just...
Anyway, calm yourself. Horror franchise, Jen.
Yes. Well, I'm going to actually... The first thing that springs to mind for me is Scream. The Scream.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. I must admit, I probably need a little bit of revision of the last one.
Yeah.
But I do remember the fact that it just rejuvenated the whole horror...
Yeah.
Horror
it did, yeah.
Before then, ironically, they kind of went back to where they had been. because horrors were petered out because they all got they were all the same. Scream came along and was a shot in the arm, and now they've within a few years they went back to
generic. Thanks to Scream, in fact, it's led back to where it was again.
Yeah, right, it's been a perfect loop. But the first one was great, and you got so many things that, you know, that are in film vocabulary now. You know, with the voice changer and the mask and everything. Yeah, I mean, it's ingrained now into film history.
And also the film in references and, you know, knowing the rules of horror films.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And
yeah.
which worked for Scream 2 as well.
Yeah.
Scream 3, not as much, but a little bit.
There's still a bit there.
But now there's a fourth one on route. Yeah. So it could continue it.
Mm.
I'm going to go with the Evil Dead films. It's less of an obvious franchise because they're never blockbustery quite.
Yes.
But in terms of changing, sort of keeping things fresh and interesting, they're all three quite different films. And also funny as well, which I value.
Which is good, it's a dark sense of humour. It's good,
They're just three films that work for me a lot. Yeah. And like Army of Darkness, it's almost not quite horror anymore. It almost goes into more action, comedy sort of. But still with elements of horror. And we watched Spider-Man 2 the other day as well. And there was the Doc Ock in the hospital scene with his arms flailing around is very much Evil Dead direction.
Right.
Yeah. It's just Sam Raimi just letting rip and thinking, I can have some fun. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a fun director.
Yes.
He knows what he wants.
Except in Spider-Man 3, where.
Anyway.
But yeah, so Evil Dead for me.
Yes, okay, fair enough. Well, that's our choices.
Yep.
So if you'd like to email us your choices, podcast at moviebanter.co.uk.
Yes, or you can tweet them.
Indeed.
To Movie Banter.
Yeah, give
and,
us...
What?
Yeah.
Speak!
Yes.
No, too late, you've missed your window. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, let us know which films was your choice over Halloween weekend.
That'd be good to know. Also, because this is episode 50. Hooray! Happy birthday to you.
And most people have said that we don't look a day over 30 weeks old.
Exactly, but that means...
Except Jen.
I don't know whether we celebrate this one, or, of course, in 2 weeks' time, it's our year anniversary.
Well, yeah.
So, why can't we do both?
I think we should do both.
Yeah.
But as a result, if you want to email in anything for our... year anniversary, any good wishes, that'd be nice.
That would be nice.
Or your favourite bits over the year.
Yeah, a favourite film, you know, just anything, really.
Anything.
Send us words.
Cake, send us
cake, yeah.
Prezzies.
Yeah.
Shiny ones.
But anything particularly to make the 52nd one an extravaganza.
Yes.
Then
our 1 year birthday.
Your favourite films or whatever.
We'll
do a thing like that. You know?
Yes.
So, yeah, just send us stuff. And we'll see you then, but before then, we'll see you on the 51st one.
Yeah, which will be a dead time space filler.
Exactly.
But yes, we'll see you next week.
Will do.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.